Coming up on Tech News Today, YouTube about to launch paid channels. Do we want them? Also, will smartphones save Nintendo? And dropping DRM didn't hurt one big book publisher. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, May 6th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Tonks Coffee. Tonks offers a bi-weekly subscription. Tonks sources their beans directly from the growers. They're roasted and shipped within 24 hours, giving you the freshest coffee beans in the world. For a free sample, visit tonks.org/TNT. That's tonx.org/TNT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT5. And by TechServe. TechServe assists U.S. businesses of all sizes with their technology needs, including Apple, Avid, Adobe, and HP solutions. Visit techserve.com/TNT and receive a complimentary iPad deployment assessment. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachary.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Yay! Jason Howell's back.
Welcome
back,
Jason. What am I doing here? I fell asleep to a crying baby, and suddenly I woke up here. I don't know how that happened.
Three crying babies.
Yes.
To have you back.
Thank you.
Let's kick off the day with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. That 3D printed gun from Defense Distributed we mentioned on Friday has been test fired. The gun, which is called the Liberator, was test fired Thursday, May 2nd at a private range north of Austin, Texas, using string to pull the trigger at a distance, which was a good idea because one of the test barrels exploded. After some improvements, the gun was test fired again on May 4th, this time by hand and with no exploding barrel. Plans can be downloaded from defcad.org.
YouTube could launch its paid subscription service for up to 50 video channels as early as this week. People familiar with the plan tell the Financial Times. Subscriptions could start at about $1.99 per month. YouTube declined to comment on a target launch date for the service, but company spokespeople have stated that YouTube is looking to create a subscription platform that could bring even more content to YouTube for our users and enjoy and provide our creators with another vehicle to generate revenue from their content beyond the rental and ad-supported models we offer.
The Japan Times reports that Nintendo is working on bringing smartphone apps and games to the Wii U in an effort to bolster the lackluster console. The report says Nintendo is offering developers conversion software so their apps can run on Nintendo's hardware. Maybe soon you'll be able to play Angry Birds on your Wii U, Tom.
Hey, I'll have to turn it back on. The European Commission believes Motorola Mobility abused its market position by seeking and enforcing an injunction against Apple in Germany over patents essential to mobile phone standards. Essentially, the commission said in its preliminary view that when two parties will probably agree on terms, an injunction like this could distort negotiations. The commission sent a statement of objection to Motorola.
Looking to incorporate Facebook's social graph into your Path app? If you've got the latest update, good luck. Facebook confirms it has restricted Path's API access, so Path can no longer look up your Facebook friends, which prevents it then from sending them invitations or suggesting that you follow them. The move may be in response to Path spamming users' contacts with invites last week.
Whoops, Amazon just leaked the first 8-inch Windows 8 tablet by posting the product page for the Acer W3-810 with a price of about $380. Amazon has since taken down the page, but the details are out. The W3-810 has an 8.1-inch screen with a resolution of 1280 by 800, a 1.8 gigahertz dual-core Intel Atom processor, 32 gigabytes of space, and 2 gigs of RAM.
Ars Technica reports an internal email sent to Microsoft employees working on the Xbox 360 states the game, I'm sorry, the next Xbox, not the 360, states the game console will work without an internet connection when playing a Blu-ray disc, watching live TV, and playing a single-player game. Email seems to confirm that the next Xbox will have an HDMI pass-through for connection to a cable box, but those fears of having to be always on when playing a game seem to have been just a tad overblown.
HP has released some new small to medium business, or SMB, laptop PCs. The new ProBook 200 and ProBook 400 notebook PCs give the SMB buyer several configurations, starting at about $249, and bring Windows 8 to business users that may have been avoiding the switch. Options include AMD Radeon HD 7450M discrete graphics, Windows 8, Windows 8 Pro, plus Ubuntu Linux configurations.
Speaking on CNN Wednesday, former FBI counterterrorism agent Tim Clemente implied that the U.S. government has access to all phone conversations. Referring to phone conversations, Clemente said, "All of that stuff is being captured as we speak, whether we know it or like it or not." He followed up on Thursday in another appearance on CNN by saying all digital communications, implying things like email, are recorded and stored. Previous reports in the Washington Post in 2007 and 2010 alleged the same thing.
The battle between Aereo and all the broadcast networks continues. This time, Aereo is on the offensive by seeking a declaratory judgment from the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York. Aereo wants the court to enter a judgment saying Aereo's technology does not infringe on the network's copyrights. Aereo is trying to make sure it doesn't get sued in other markets as it expands, since it has already been sued over copyright issues.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Tonks Coffee, Sarah Lane. That sounds delicious.
It does, yeah. So the whole idea is that there are people out there that want you to think that you've got to go to this, you know, really artisanal coffee shop, and they've got the fancy, the crazy stuff or with the what is it called? Shoot. Oh, man, I had this whole thing all set up.
Things. I've seen those.
Chromex. Well, anyway.
Oh, Chemex.
Yeah, yeah. That's what they have at my fancy coffee shop. The thing is that the beans are really what's important when it comes to coffee. It's not so much the fancy machinery and the baristas that are all dressed up. Really, really good coffee can be had at home. You just have to get them there. And that's actually what Tonks does so well. Tonks is a delivery service where they ship coffee to you within 24 hours of roasting. Homebrewed coffee can be just as good as your favorite cafe. It's just about the beans. You got to get good beans. If you get bags of beans from a grocery store, you don't know how long they've been sitting on the shelves. If it's pre-ground coffee, forget about it. It's bad. Great coffee doesn't have as much to do with fancy gadgets as you think. It's all about fresh coffee that gets to you in a convenient amount of time. Speaking of convenient, Tonks is a bi-weekly subscription service which sends the beans all over the earth directly to your door, and it's really a lot more affordable. If you're going to a cafe regularly, you know that stuff can add up. Tonks offers plenty of help on best brewing methods and equipment, by the way. If you think, well, you know, I need a new coffee maker, they'll help you out with that. And they source directly from the growers. They've got relationships with a lot of growers around the world, so they can pretty much follow where the freshest coffee is all over the earth and make sure that that gets to you. Maybe you're not a huge coffee person, but you know somebody who is. Tonks Coffee can be a really good gift. That person who has everything, they're still going to want coffee every day. So why not get them a great cup of coffee every morning, something that they don't even have to leave their house to enjoy. If you are a coffee connoisseur, or you know somebody who is, or you just love coffee, you need to try Tonks Coffee. These guys are great. Visit tonks.org/TNT. Every 2 weeks, you get a new batch of incredible beans roasted to perfection, subscription only, and for listeners and viewers of TNT, if you go to tonks.org/TNT, you'll get a free sample to try it out for yourself and enjoy that delicious coffee. And thanks to Tonks for sponsoring this episode of Tech News Today.
Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, very happy to have Tom Krazit, news editor from GigaOM, back on the show. Welcome back, Tom.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Thanks thanks for joining us in studio, too, making the trek up to Petaluma.
I'm in the Tom seat, from what I'm told.
Yes, you're in the former Tom seat. That's true. Let's start off our discussion today with YouTube and more information about paid channels. Could come as early as this week. Is that right, Ayaz?
Yeah, that's pretty much the entire story. The Financial Times saying YouTube.
Sorry.
There you go. But yeah, so 50 channels, $2 a month at lowest price. Let's just get right to the discussion then. Tom, you think YouTube's going to be able to compete with the likes of Netflix and Amazon? They're asking for money monthly.
I mean, it all comes down to
$2 a month.
Did we mix up the Toms again?
Okay, yeah.
He looked right at me, Tom. I'm sorry.
you go ahead.
Say Tom K and Tom M.
Tom K, would you like to answer this question?
Sure. I mean, I think they can compete. It sort of depends on what they get. I mean, you know, if you're going to pay for content, you have to have good content. So if they can get good shows, if they can get things that people actually want to watch, then sure. You know, I don't see why not. They're Google. They have a ton of money to go out and get that content. So, you know, I mean, it's, I think it's tricky, though. I don't think anybody's really figured out how to do the paid, you know, video subscription thing all that well. So,
Tom Merritt, what do you think of the idea of having individual channels that you'd be subscribed to, as opposed to buying one service like Netflix? You pay $8 a month, you get all you can eat, pretty much. But subscribing to individual channels seems a little different.
Well, Tom Akhtar, I believe that I think what's going to go on here is really popular channels, things like Video Game High School, The Fine Brothers, those kinds of, you know, Hannah Hart. Those are the types of people. I don't know that those are the people, and I should say my wife works at YouTube, but I don't know anything extra about the story. Those are the types of channels that are likely to try this. And the idea would be, hey, you're a big fan of our stuff. We're still going to have free shows, but for $2 a month, you'll get extra things. That could work. Now, that's the way I'm guessing it would work. If it's, oh, our channel that used to be free, now you have to pay $2 to get it, I think that would be a bad idea.
Tom Lane, you're a cord cutter. What do you think?
Take that back.
Sarah Lane, you're a cord cutter. What do you think?
I agree with Tom Merritt that if there's a channel that I've subscribed to already on YouTube and I'm watching it and I'm enjoying it, and now all of a sudden it's $2 a month, I can afford that. But yeah, it'll feel a little bit annoying just to say, oh, okay, now free content is under, you know, sort of a paywall type of thing. I think that it's going to be interesting to see how YouTube converts people who are used to the a la carte type of method, like me, Netflix and Hulu and that sort of thing, to be actually choosing individual channels. Then again, depending on the channel, you know, some channels are just, oh, okay, it's this basically this show over and over and over. Maybe it's three times a week, maybe it's once a week, maybe it's every day, that sort of thing. Other channels are a variety of programming. So in a way, you're almost paying for a variety of shows. It really just depends on the channel. You know, I know at Twit, we've experimented with putting everything that is on Twit into a Twit channel and then breaking shows out into individual channels. So, you know, it's sort of interesting. What would our audience want? And I think it's just, this is a new model, and it'll be interesting to see what they can pull in.
I'm kind of curious how YouTube will pull this off, because I think it'd be weird that if you went to a channel that was free, or that you go to any channel that, oh, I'm already paying $3 to YouTube a month. What do you mean I have to pay again for this other thing? I pay again. The idea that we love is a la carte channels in general for cable, but I wonder how that's going to be actually executed at YouTube to the point where customers are like, oh, I get this. This is a different set. This is a totally different kind of model.
Well, and I think it's, like I said, it's going to be targeted at the fans of a particular property, at the Freddie Wongs, at the I always call them the wrong name, Rhett and Link.
Who's Freddie Wong?
Freddie Wong's a huge star? Oh, okay. On YouTube. He's got millions and millions of subscribers. And that's what I think is so interesting, is folks like us who don't really watch YouTube look at this and go, why would I pay $2 a month for stuff? That's kind of weird. What's it going to be? And I'm going to pay over and over and over. That doesn't make any sense, because we're comparing it to Netflix and Hulu. But for these folks who are just like devoted to a particular YouTube star, like Hannah Hart, for instance, saying, hey, if you pay $2 a month, you're going to get earlier access to the episodes or special behind-the-scenes stuff. That's the kind of fan service that I think could pay off.
You either need to do that, or you need to have new exclusive content. You know, like,
yeah,
you're not asking people to pay for the free content they've been using, you know, or watching all along. You're asking them to pay for something new and awesome. And then, like you said, giving them premium access would be pretty cool, too.
Now, that's one end of what's happening in video. The other end of what's happening in video is bringing mainstream, massive television to you over the internet. Aereo has been trying to do that. And now there's more court case action happening with Aereo, Sarah.
Yeah, exactly. So Aereo, just as a refresher, distributes broadcast television over the web and gets around having to pay fees to the networks in order to do so. The networks are upset about that. And Aereo has actually, you know, won a few legal battles thus far, and has said that they are going to enter 22 new markets this year. The first one, Boston, this month. So CBS, which is one of the broadcasters that is suing Aereo, has said, anytime Aereo enters a new market, we're going to oppose this. We're very upset. This is, you know, everyone should know that this is exactly what's going to happen. Last month, a spokesman from CBS, Dana McClintock, tweeted, not once, but twice, that lawsuits were on the way. CBS CEO Les Moonves agreed during an earnings call that was last week. So everyone on CBS is on the same page that, yes, Aereo, we are not going to back down. But in April, a federal appeals court, we had mentioned this in the past, rejected a request from broadcasters and TV station owners to basically pull the plug on Aereo's TV over the web service. So Aereo now says in a complaint, a joint complaint against CBS that references both Moonves and McClintock, says we want the same court that granted us our first legal victory, which is a district in New York, to preemptively rule against CBS in any of the potential cities that we end up entering. They've got a list of a bunch of cities that they're planning to expand to later this year. Ayaz, is that something that Aereo can do legally and say, listen, there's a precedent that was set in New York, and there's really no reason that another district court in, let's say, the Massachusetts Boston area shouldn't just wave us in with the same ruling?
Yeah, trying to get a declaratory judgment is going to be useful. I don't know if it's going to help in general for every single lawsuit that these networks are trying to get against Aereo. They might try some other grounds to sue them. That might be the workaround for something like this. Because the law that's involved here is a federal law, it's a copyright law. That's a federal one, so it should apply everywhere. So I don't know how exactly. I can see why the networks want to sue them in every district they can, but Aereo is trying something pretty intelligent, and we'll see if it holds up.
Tom Krasner, have you been following this story much?
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen when Aereo gets to Boston later this month?
Well, we actually had Aereo's CEO at our Paid Content Live conference earlier this month, and he's a very determined guy. You know, I can't really imagine that, you know, even if they don't get the declaratory judgment the way, you know, play out the way they want it, like, they're not backing down from this. They believe they have found a loophole to exploit in the way that these laws work. And I think that they're so determined that, you know, they are determined to see the legal thing play out as long as absolutely possible. And I think that they know that they have CBS and the rest of the networks pretty scared. So there's a lot of incentive for them to keep fighting.
Tom Merritt, are we one step closer to CBS and Fox and everybody saying, fine, you can't get this for free anymore? We're no longer a network channel. We're a cable channel.
Yeah, I think we're one step closer to that kind of rhetoric getting even more heated. What is interesting to me is CBS having this emotional reaction, just like they had an emotional reaction to the Hopper and Dish back in January. It seems like this isn't the wisest strategy to say we're going to fight you in every city, but to kind of pull back and say, okay, it's not looking good and legal, let's spend our efforts on lobbying and get the legislation changed. Because I think that's the most likely thing to go in the network's favor, is for them to lobby Congress and say, there is this loophole now. It looks like it's going to be going through court in Aereo's favor. Let's close it. Let's pass a new law. And they have said, Fox and CBS have both said, that would be the next step for them.
Well, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens when the good people of Boston have Aereo programming, and if Aereo can keep with the assertion that if CBS can keep with, if Aereo is allowed to redistribute programming without paying, nobody's going to pay. And now we have no business model. It's over for us.
Because each of these networks only have one network. Because, you know, there isn't like five Fox networks or 100 of them, millions of CBS Viacom networks.
Right.
There's only one. There's only CBS. There's only one Fox.
I think they should take a page out of Hulu's book and sell advertising alongside of their programming.
That would never work, Tom.
Yeah, I don't know.
Never work.
Just, that's crazy talk.
Not a proven model.
Let's go on to quantum cryptography. Don't run away. You're not going to have to know any physics for this. But the little bit that you should know is that measuring an object in quantum physics changes it. You don't have to know how it changes it, but it allows you to tell if a message has been read if you're sending a message that is quantum in nature. Now, this allows something, and this is getting into Steve Gibson Security Now area. One-time pad can be sent then and used for regular classical encryption, not quantum encryption. Now, why would you want to know either one of those things? Currently, quantum systems are almost uncrackable, but they can only go point to point. Because if you route it the same thing that prevents you from eavesdropping on something, that the fact of observation changing the state, also makes it difficult to route. Because when you route it, it changes it as well. They're working on quantum routers that might get around this problem. Those are some ways from any kind of commercial viability. However, Richard Hughes and some folks at Los Alamos National Labs in New Mexico have been running a quantum network for 2.5 years. The thing is, they don't use a router. They use a central hub. The hub is the only thing that can receive quantum messages. The nodes that send the messages can only transmit. They use a laser to transmit. And then what they do is they send their one-time pad to the hub, and then the hub is able to decrypt their messages on the quantum end and then send them using one-time pad, normal encryption, classical encryption, to anywhere else on the network. As long as the hub stays secure, there's your point of weakness. Node devices are simple. They're inexpensive. They're plug and play. So this is something that they're going to roll out and say, hey, you can do this. You can do this on a set-top box. You can do this on a home computer and have a type of quantum encryption that has to have a central hub. Now, if they get quantum routers, then this becomes less attractive. We don't know how long it's going to take them to get quantum routers. Tom Krasit, is this useful or should we just say forget it? You know what? It's too complicated. Let's wait for quantum routers if we need this kind of encryption.
Well, you know, I mean, you look at some of the other things we're talking about today with, you know, government surveillance and you know, communications that can be easily tracked and stored. You know, there's obviously a lot of applications for something like this if you want to, you know, protect your communications. So, you know, I kind of wonder, though, I mean, the key thing you said was right, as long as the hub is secure. So, you know, when you have a central point of failure like that, it seems to kind of defeat the whole purpose of networking, which is to, you know, be able to route around different computers. So I don't know. I my quantum physics degree has expired, so I can't really go too deep into it. But
I put mine in a box. I don't know if it's expired or not till I open it and it collapses. It's both expired and not expired. Ayaz, do you look at this? I mean, they're actually putting point-to-point quantum systems out in things like power situations where they want to control the infrastructure and they don't need it to be on a bigger network. Does this sound useful?
I'm thinking about how secure this could be, and if you can have the actual connections be secure so that people aren't necessarily the issue. That always seems to be the big issue when it comes to anything with security. It's the people. So if you get really great technology in there and you do have secure point-to-point communications, that's great. It's just there's always the person at the other end who could be phished or something else. So while this might sound great in theory, I'm just still kind of curious about that whole human factor potentially screwing it up.
Yeah, humans do screw it up, right? I mean, that, and humans have to be willing to implement this stuff. The thing is, they say it's going to be easy to implement on your end. It's a very small device, laser in it. But does the fact that it's called quantum and it's not the thing that everyone agrees is the best way for quantum encryption, do you think that would scare some consumers, even in the enterprise, off? What about you think, Sarah?
I must admit, I've spent the last 5 minutes trying to think of a really good quantum leap joke, and it just hasn't happened yet. But no, I think, actually, Tom, it's a really good point. I think for a lot of people, they would hear your very eloquent description of what's going on here and say, I don't know. I mean, what's the thing that's going to be the most secure that's going to work well? Is that, can I buy it? Can I go down to the Radio Shack and get something like this? No? When? When's that going to happen? Okay. So a lot of this is just sort of like, oh, this is something that there's potential, and we're going to see this in commercial products eventually. Yeah, if the security is there, then that's the way that things will move naturally. I don't know. You know, a lot of this is a little bit beyond my realm.
Seems like the content
company enterprise-level computing Scott Bakula connection in there, too. Go ahead, man.
I was just going to say, I think the content companies might like something like this, you know, like really good streaming, secure, encrypted content, you know, one-to-one. I mean, maybe that's something they could do.
That's an interesting idea, yeah, because they rely on a central hub already. So then it's like, hey, get our set-top box with the laser in it, and we have quantum encrypted
quantum
DRM.
Super DRM.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't let them hear that. Hey. That's a horrible idea. All right. Well, if you're looking forward to quantum encryption, we give you a quantum of solace that it's on its way. Let's take a break and thank our sponsor, Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, or online store. Since its platform upgrade last fall, Squarespace just keeps rolling out new products, features, integrations, templates. I use it all the time for Sword and Laser, and it gets easier and more pleasurable to use all the time. To make sure you get the most from the recent innovations, Squarespace has a 24/7 support team. They provide you live chat during the week, extremely fast email support throughout the day and night. We were having a problem that wasn't even Squarespace. It had to do with the way our podcast feed was working. They were there for us. They were helping us. Plans start as low as $8 a month for software and hosting. Squarespace is a real value if you need an exceptionally well-designed, reliable website host. Squarespace has an award-winning design team. They regularly add smart new features, amazing design templates. They just added a new calendar feature called the Events Collection that allows you to share scheduled updates if you have a store, things like sales events, tour dates, and they just released a beautiful new template called Momentum, which has cinematic full bleed image display. If you're a photographer, you know what that means, and you know that's pretty awesome. And designers, you can showcase your work with that. Squarespace is fast and easy to use. Everything is drag and drop. Their page builder tool called the Layout Engine enables you to customize pages in seconds, adding blocks of content, things like photos, videos, text. I add videos using this all the time on Sword and Laser. And you just pull it in, immediately preview the layout as you go. Powerful and flexible e-commerce solutions published to and from social media. You don't have to listen to me talk about it, though. Go try it out for free. You don't have to give them a credit card or anything. Just sign up for a free account. Start building your website. If you do decide to purchase the service, which we think you might, use the offer code TNT5 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That includes monthly and annual plans. And don't forget about free domain registrations for annual plan customer subscriptions. That's squarespace.com. Use the offer code TNT5. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Onward to the leaky Amazon ship. They've leaked all kinds of things over the years when product pages go up. And what did they leak this time, Sarah?
Well, apparently it is an 8-inch Acer tablet, but not just any Acer tablet, an 8.1-inch Acer Iconia W3-810-1600. It was basically, as Aya has mentioned in the news views, briefly on Amazon.com, and you have all sorts of conspiracy theorists saying, well, you know, there are way too many leaks on these web pages. It was intentional. But whether or not that's true, I mean, let's think about what this might mean, right? Microsoft's hardware certification program dropped the allowable screen resolution to allow it to be smaller for Windows 8 tablets from 1366 by 768 down to 1024 by 768. Leaked builds of Windows Blue, which is upcoming, show Snap feature that's compatible with smaller tablets. Previously, it was only compatible with that 1366 by 768 resolution. And if you look at, you know, there are screenshots, of course, this Amazon listing has since been taken down, but of course it's been screenshotted a bunch of times. If you look at the listing of what's sort of inside this guy, it lists the processor as a 1.5 gigahertz Apple A4, which is the same chip in the original iPad, but the item description lists it on the Iconia W3 as an Intel dual-core Atom CPU, so x86 processor, sounds like full Windows 8. Not just some sort of a Windows RT type of a thing. And it was listed at $380, $379.99. So full Windows 8 experience for a bit more than, I don't know, an iPad mini. Tom Krazit, what do you think? Does it seem legit?
I think it seems legit, but except for the Apple chip. I mean, there's just no way that's true.
Yeah.
Period.
That's just a typo or something strange, definitely.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I think we've seen a general trend towards the smaller tablet. You know, we started off kind of in the 10-inch space, and, you know, the Google has had some, well, Google and Samsung have had some success at the 7-inch, and you see the iPad mini now out there, too. So it kind of makes sense. You know, Windows tablets aren't exactly flying off the shelves, so it kind of makes sense that they'd want to try different form factors to see if they can, you know, figure out a magic bullet there.
Do you think that this smaller form factor is the key to people adopting Windows 8 tablets that may not have already?
I don't know if it's the key. I think that added with the price drop at $380, that's pretty cheap. And if that's one of the first ones coming out, you can imagine these devices getting cheaper and cheaper. When Microsoft's all this stuff about Blue is leaked and having this new version of Snap on a smaller screen does make a lot of sense. So you can have these smaller devices. I think that companies need to fill this niche anyway, because there's tons of different 8-inch tablets out there, 7-inch tablets, 10-inch ones, every which way. You might as well have Windows on it. Microsoft needs this to take off anyway. At $380, I think it's a good start. I don't know if it's going to turn heads at that price, because it is an 8-inch tablet. Probably not going to be like your main workhorse machine, because it's going to have an Intel Atom processor in theory. So who knows how it's going to do for Microsoft and Acer.
Tom Merritt, it sounds like everybody else thinks that $380 sounds pretty good. If you compare that to something like, you know, the Kindle Fire, though, at the, you know, in the same size, do you think that people are going to go ahead and plunk down the money for this?
Yeah, for if this turns out to be true, right. I think they would. $380 for a full Windows 8 tablet experience, I think would do very well. I'm just extraordinarily suspicious that these specs are accurate. Amazon has accidentally published pages in the past where the specs ended up changing when the actual product went live, because they had just filled it with dummy specs. And that A4, I'm like Tom Krasit there, that A4 stands out to me as like, I don't think that's what's actually in this thing. And that makes me wonder, is $380 the actual price of the thing? Are any of the rest of these specs the real specs yet or not? So I'm a little skeptical that all of this is going to end up being true, but we'll find out at Build. I think the Build conference is where we're supposed to first hear about a new version of the Surface tablet. And I don't think it's crazy to think that they might do a $380 Acer tablet. So who knows? Shall we move on to Tor saying, you know what? A year ago, we cut out all digital rights management, April 2012, from our eBooks. Took a little heat for that. Hachette UK actually urged their authors to push back against Tor because they felt it would negatively affect property rights for all authors. Because let's say Hachette has the rights to a publisher's work in the UK, but Tor in the US is putting it out DRM free. Well, now Hachette's version has DRM and Tor's doesn't. People might go and pirate the Tor version from the US. Tor said, well, you know what? DRM is a constant annoyance. It prevents our users from using legitimately purchased ebooks in perfectly legal ways, like moving them from one kind of e-reader to another. So we're going to do this. We have the support of big authors like Peter F. Hamilton, China Mieville. And this week, they published their results. After a year, Julie Crisp, editorial director at Tor UK, wrote that the publisher has seen, quote, no discernible increase in piracy on any of our titles, despite them being DRM free for nearly a year. Could be confirmation bias. Maybe Tor wants to see it that way. Tom Krasit, do you think other publishers could take this as a cue? Or is it specific to Tor's audience, which is a little more cutting edge?
I would think any other major publisher would be very freaked out at the prospect of dropping DRM just wholesale like this. You know, Tor is a unique company with, you know, unique titles. And I don't think that, you know, some of the big six publishers would really be as open to experimentation with these kinds of things as others. I mean, you know, the easiest way to get fired in the publishing industry, right, is to make a decision that is a little controversial or a little out there. So, you know, when you're smaller, you can test the waters a little bit more.
What about going upstream? Parent company here, Tom Doherty or Macmillan, might take a cue from their subdivision?
I seriously doubt it. For some reason, the publishers are way behind when it compared to something like the music industry, which is weird to say about the music industry.
That's the first time that's ever been said.
The music industry, for some reason, now is okay with DRM-free. It took a long time, and seems like publishers are just waiting and waiting and waiting before they'll make a change, if they ever will. The thing is, you have Amazon Kindle books that are locked into Amazon devices or the Kindle apps, and then you have all these other competing bookstores that aren't compatible with each other, which seem just really silly that you have to remember which app your book is in. So the idea of having these DRM-free books, that'd be great, but I just don't see the larger publishers moving on that, because if they haven't yet and they haven't seen the example set by the music industry, again, another weird thing to say, I don't think they're going to do it now.
I also think that, you know, the average person who might be enjoying ebooks and, you know, you mentioned that it can be a nuisance and frustrating to try to remember where your book is. A lot of people are not using multiple apps to read books. They might use one and they like it and that's great. And they say, look at this, I'm not using dead tree books anymore. Wow, I'm really part of the future. So I think for a lot of people, DRM is a non-issue. Now, I understand that for the Tor market, that is not the case. But I think if you're a large publisher, until you get some extreme pushback, something like, you know, the Tor folks saying, hey, DRM is really not necessary. We're not really experiencing all of the stuff that you're worried about. as a large publisher, you are going to hold on to that as long as you can.
That's an interesting question. With e-ink readers sort of not growing as fast as tablets, people using tablets more for reading, Amazon having the strategy of saying, hey, you can read our books on any tablet out there because we got apps for all the platforms. There may not be the same case that you had where music, where people said, oh, well, now my music library doesn't play on this device. And that's what really pushed DRM out of music, was that that freedom that allowed people to transfer their music to any device. We may not see that kind of pressure with ebooks, but I'm glad that Tor did this, though, and I wish them the best. I wish there would be some kind of evidence-based analysis of this, I guess is what I'm thinking. It's crazy. Let's talk about smartphones and how they're going to save Nintendo.
Yeah, so the Japan Times is reporting that Nintendo is trying to modify its game console so customers can use smartphone applications. Nintendo apparently is offering professional use conversion software to application developers so they can make smartphone games that can be played on the Wii U. Nintendo is hoping the smartphone software is going to help their console sales, and they're also going to be making their own software just in case nobody else does. But there is an issue with the gamepad. It doesn't support multi-touch. Tom Krasit, do you think this is a good move, desperate move, or is Nintendo going the wrong way by putting smartphone apps on their devices?
Well, you look at where a lot of the gaming innovation has been over the last couple of years. It's been on mobile. So, you know, I kind of understand why they'd want to get some of those titles onto their platform. There's a lot of people, Angry Birds, Nintendo. I mean, you know, like there's maybe a market for that. I find it kind of hard to believe that they are going to really move a lot more consoles simply because you can play the same games you can play on your phone on the Wii. I don't exactly understand why you'd buy a Wii for that purpose. But, you know, I mean, it's always nice to have more options for content on your device. So I can see why they'd want to do it.
Sarah, do you think Nintendo should go in the other way by putting its games on smartphones instead of trying to get smartphone apps and games on its device?
Yeah, I think this is still Nintendo saying the Wii U, though. Look at all the great things the Wii U can do. Have we reminded you how great it is that you can play your Wii games on the Wii U? Now the smartphone games that you love so much can also be on the Wii U. This seems a little backwards to me from what I think their strategy should have been a while ago, which is bring Nintendo to the place where people seem to be flocking to games, and that's on mobile devices. However, like Tom Krasit said, if you really do like a particular suite of games, or even just one, and all of a sudden you can play that via your Wii U, it does make it more compelling. Absolutely. I mean, it's more interesting to me suddenly. But yes, this does seem like a desperation move to me.
Tom Merritt, it seems like the Wii U is struggling like crazy. Nintendo did spam everybody by saying, hey, Wii U's new and it's a new console. Could this actually move consoles?
I don't think this moves consoles. I think what it does for Nintendo is it probably gives them another revenue stream off of existing console users. So if you already have a Wii U, you may go spend some money in the Wii store to get Angry Birds, to get some of these popular smartphone titles that you like playing and put them on your Wii U. So it's smart in that respect. I don't think this is, maybe it's not even meant to address, but I don't think it does address console sales particularly.
Also, the price point of the Wii U seems a little ridiculous. If you want to get a 99-cent game from an app store or something, it seems, why would you spend over a couple $100 for a device that lets you do that? That's not a phone. It's just this console. It's like the platypus of consoles. It's like, oh, why is that there? I have no idea.
It's almost a suggestion that they're having trouble getting software made for the Wii U, right? Like if they have to turn to the mobile market to get titles for the device, then maybe they're just not getting much support from their own kind of developers.
That's right. EA did say that they're not bringing Madden 25 or something to the Wii U, so that's really scary.
All right, Jason, it's been a couple weeks. Are you prepared to fire up the randomizer?
Yeah, I got it. See, piece of cake.
Nice. Like you never... Mashable has a story today about a company in Rotterdam who are creating a modular dance floor system that uses kinetic energy from dancers' movements to power the dance floor's LED lights, as well as sending electricity to other nearby systems. So when you go to the Temple nightclub in San Francisco, the more you dance, the more power you generate.
Oh, boy. This is fun.
This is just that kind of fun?
I sounded like I wasn't excited about it, but I actually think this is really fun.
I can see this being a competition because these things drop 10 millimeters when you step on them. So that's an actual drop.
That's exactly 1 centimeter.
That's... Well, yeah, okay. Well, why don't I just finish my point, Tom? How about that? What a crazy idea. So I'm just thinking that if you have your friends dancing on the non-moving floor, you want to have competition to be like, hey, how much electricity did you generate on these things? Mm-hmm. I just think that this is the right use for kinetic energy because you have a dance floor. People are going to be using this, and it could be really silly in the long run.
Have you ever been to Temple Nightclub in San Francisco? Because
no.
I have, and people dance like idiots there. So if you're going to, why not power the grid while you're at it? I think that's a wonderful idea.
Dance?
I may have been one of those idiots. It just doesn't really matter, those details.
Like,
just saying.
Was your coffee maker powered by Sarah today? It was.
Power for the people, huh? Dance it
out. Bouncy floor, yeah. All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, TechServe. TechServe is New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and technology provider, serving creative professionals at all levels, individual customers, Fortune 100 companies. Doesn't matter where you fall on that spread, they'll help you out. If you've been to, the Delta Terminal in LaGuardia or Toronto or Minneapolis, you may have noticed every seat in the terminal equipped with an iPad. It was TechServe that helped them do that. Over 1.5 million visitors used these iPads in Delta terminals just this past year. OTG Management, the hospitality company behind the terminals, turned to TechServe to provide, configure, and install the world's largest deployment of iPads, a number that just keeps growing as they add new terminals. And TechServe is the natural place to turn for all of that help. They sell support, they personalize, they configure, they manage massive projects like this, from the Delta terminals to a school that had 700 chef instructors to an operation that delivered personally configured iPads to 3,000 cable techs. TechServe is able to do full lifecycle management for all your technology needs by providing the devices you need, getting them up and running, teaching you and your staff how to effectively use them. They don't just throw the devices at you and leave. And then they maintain them so that they're working efficiently. It's all taken care of. TechServe also provides ongoing support. So if your enterprise does have a problem down the road, helps just a phone call away. If you're considering adding iPads to your business, why not ensure the project's success with the world's most experienced partner? If your business is considering integrating iOS technology at your workplace, contact TechServe today and receive a complimentary iPad deployment assessment. Visit TechServe.com/TNT, and TechServe will help you assess your current or future iPad needs and give you advice to make it a success. That's TechServe.com/TNT. Thank TechServe for their support of Tech News Today. What's happening on the calendar, Sarah?
Well, we got an anniversary. Happy 10th anniversary to Eve Online. I was actually going to link us to a Blogspot posting about this, but I don't know. Apparently, the link is down. But happy anniversary, Eve. Wired Business Conference starts in New York City tomorrow, May 7th. It's actually just a one-day conference. Also tomorrow, EA is announcing their latest earnings report. GameStop has announced it's no longer going to accept trade-ins for PlayStation 2 games or accessories or systems after the 1st of June. Sony officially retired the console earlier this year. You might have remembered that. And finally, The Sims 4 is coming to both Mac and Windows enthusiasts in 2014.
Woohoo! Wow. All right. More Sims. Maybe you'll even be able to play it. Unlike SimCity. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We got a message from Nick. He says, hey, TNT, I've enclosed a picture of the new Best Buy Samsung stores. I was talking with the gentleman who was setting it up, and he said, this is one of the first ones in existence. This was taken in Minnesota. So we had an attachment of this image, and it looks like just another Samsung pop-up.
Oh, it's nice, though.
It's glossy white for the audio listeners, some chairs so you can sit and try out the products.
A guy in a blue shirt.
Leaning over.
Comforted by that.
I'm pretty sure the guy in the blue shirt's in every single display.
Makes you feel like you're in a Best Buy.
Yeah, yeah. You look like you belong here.
I wore
a
blue shirt to do a Best Buy once. Got lots of questions. Big mistake. Don't ever do that. All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. Tom Krasit, thank you for joining us. Always good to have you along. Let folks know where they can find your work at GigaOhm, what you're working on, anything you want to tell them about.
Well, thank you. You can find us at GigaOhm.com. The next big thing on our calendar is Structure, which is our cloud computing and infrastructure conference in June in San Francisco. And you can find out more information about that at events.gigaohm.com.
Excellent. Check it out, events.gigaohm.com. Don't forget, you can submit stories for our consideration. If you'd like to have us talk about something on the show, the best place to go is technewstoday.reddit.com. It's our subreddit where everybody can submit links and vote on everybody else's link. So before you submit a link, go look, see if somebody else already submitted. Just vote it up. That's the way we do it. Look at that every day to figure out what we're going to cover on the show. It's one of the places we look. So go there, technewstoday.reddit.com. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. And you can give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. Our phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW. Paul Spain joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.